This is Dr. Joe Camerato with Cross Continuum, and I am here to shoot from the hip on something that I feel like is not talked about a whole lot, and I feel like should be talked about a whole lot more. And it's kind of a duo thing here. The idea of kinesiophobia and the nocebo effect. Now, these both represent like two turning points in my understanding of basically like human health and our jobs as physical therapists and really where we fit into the continuum of health and when we're treating people. And I remember learning about, of course, the nocebo effect, which is like the opposite of the placebo effect, mainly a negative outcome due to a negative expectation. And I remember learning about that and being like, wow, what a game changer this idea is for the way that we talk to people, the way that we interact with people, and more so patients. But what a game changer this is, that the language that I use, that the ideas that I spread, that the narratives that I espouse can basically alter how people experience reality subjectively and how they feel and how they go about their lives. And not only that, but the idea that this change in trajectory can influence the remainder of this person's life, right? To the point that it could take, you know, years off the end of their life if things go in the worst way possible. And I had a similar kind of come to Jesus moment when I learned about kinesiophobia. And the two are interrelated. So kinesiophobia is the fear of movement. But I remember learning about kinesiophobia and how that can also have such a similar effect. And I think they go hand in hand because I think nocebo and produces kinesiophobia, right? We talk about things like perfect movement or good and bad movement or how we should be basically doing things. And especially in the musculoskeletal world, right? We're so involved in function and disability and getting people doing things that they couldn't do before, that it really helps to lump these two together. And so I wanted to kind of do an overview and bring a little bit more light than I think is really brought to kinesiophobia in the nocebo effect. Now, I think it helps to root ourselves in the overarching idea here. And this is going to be new to nobody that listens to me talk about this regularly, but the goal is to get people as active as they can possibly tolerate physical activity wise, right? And I say as active as they can possibly tolerate, because what that does is that takes them in their current context and whatever they can do based on symptoms or injury or surgery or activity tolerance. And it draws a line in the sand to say, we're going to push to the absolute maximum that you can tolerate, because that is going to produce as good of a dose-dependent response as we can get. And a dose-dependent response meaning that, especially in the physical activity world, the more that we do physical activity-wise, the more health basically comes out of the machine, right? We put activity in, health comes out. Now, there are, you know, and there are bookends to that. We can talk about, you know, ultra what have you people, but we're not going to. And so the idea is that as we put this input in of activity, health comes out the other side. Different types of activity produce different types of health. But the overarching idea that I want to dig into always is that the goal is to get people as active as possible, simply because not nearly enough people are as active as they should be at a minimum. The physical activity guidelines, I'm going to sound like a broken record over all my podcasts, the physical activity guidelines, 2 or more days a week of full body strengthening activities, and 75 to 150 minutes or 2.5 hours a week of vigorous intensity aerobic activity, which, you know, we can call steady state. Now, I root us in this because everything that I talk about, everything that I do, everything that I put out there has the intended effect of trying to get more people to be more active. And the reason of that is because it has such a robust effect on so many aspects of health that we as physical therapists sign up to improve, right? I didn't go to school as a physical therapist, as a healthcare provider, to make people less healthy. That would be very counterintuitive. And I didn't get into school to bring people to a point where they are going to die earlier due to my actions. Now, it remains to be said if anybody will die earlier because of my actions. I don't think I'll ever be able to know that, but there are certain things that I can do and certain steps that I can take to try and avoid that as best as I possibly know how to in the given moment. And so when it comes to physical activity, the general idea is that we should be doing everything in our power that we know of to get people as active as they can tolerate. Now, if they can't tolerate a whole lot, that's totally fine. We can still do as much as they can tolerate. But if they can tolerate a lot, we want to go ahead and push towards a lot. And so when it comes to kinesiophobia and nocebo, we start to question, where does the do no harm kind of phrase come in here? And again, it's so tough, and I recognize that there's things that I don't even know that I might say that people take some way. And that's the thing that I try to think about a lot is, how are people going to misinterpret what it is that I'm saying, even if I have the best intentions possible available, right? I talked about this in the dry needling podcast, where the things that you say, their intention might be fantastic, but the way that people interpret it, right, there's a law of unintended consequences that can happen here. And I'm certainly not over or doing better than anybody or, you know, not causing harm or anything like that. But it's just, when we think about the law of unintended consequences, there are certain things that we can do to try and avoid that. So one of the things, and I put out a YouTube video, my first YouTube video on this yesterday, is the idea of good and bad movement. And the way that this fits into nocebo and kinesiophobia is that if we're promoting that there are bad movements, for example, squatting with your knees over your toes, for example, running with a heel strike, like deadlifting with the rounded back, like pressing overhead, like sleeping on your stomach with your head turned to one side. If we're promoting these bad things, these bad ways to organize the human body, then we are way more likely to incite the nocebo effect and produce kinesiophobia in people. And why that's such a big deal, this whole like good and bad movement thing, is that there is no good and bad movement, the way that I look at it, at least. There just is movement. There are movements that people can tolerate. There are movements that people can't tolerate. People can tolerate, you know, doing handstand pushups and banging their head into the ground multiple times. I did that last week. My neck was a little sore afterwards, but I'm fine today. People can tolerate deadlifting. I think the current record is 1,150 pounds. People can tolerate doing contortionist activities, right, in the circus. People can tolerate swallowing swords. And so there's such a wide array of things that the human organism can adapt to that it can't make sense that there are inherently bad movements. Now, if I were to call out my own self and pick up some low-hanging fruit here, is like, well, planting and pivoting on, you know, a above 30 degree flexed knee is probably not a great thing to do, but you can still do it and it can still be fine. And so is that really like an inherently bad movement? I don't necessarily think that. But still, this idea that there is good and bad movement is one that permeates the physical therapy space a whole lot. And I've seen it at, you know, all 7 clinics that I've worked at. Make sure that you're drawing in when you're picking something up, or make sure that you're lifting with your legs, or make sure that you're, you know, not doing a push-up with your arms in that position. And I can't imagine that those sorts of messages leave people with confidence in their ability to tolerate whatever it is that they're doing after having heard that. Now, they may or may not be able to tolerate whatever direction they're given, but if they are able to tolerate, but they self-limit because they were told otherwise, then that presents a problem of being less active than they would have otherwise been. And so the idea of being less active than somebody may have otherwise been is, I think, connected back to that original drive to get people more active than they are currently, or as active as they can possibly tolerate. If we take the idea of good and bad movement and we say that there are certain bad movements and you can only move good movements, or you can only do good movements, it kind of shuts off the whole end of the world. And the thing is that the end of the world that we're shutting off is dependent on the clinician and what they know and what they're exposed to and what they believe to be good or bad movements. And just like when we're trying to define movement, like, it depends on who's running that definition. And so the differences between being a movement optimist, as Greg Lehman would call people, and subscribing to the kinesiopathologic model, which is that there is bad movement and there are movements that can degrade your body or that can always cause injury or are inherently bad, is that as a movement optimist, I would subscribe to a movement optimist, you just are under the impression that whatever I throw at this person, as long as it's dosed appropriately and matches close to their current activity tolerance, they should be pretty okay. And not only will they be okay physically, but as a mental aspect or a mental component or a psychological component, there is like a inherent confidence in being able to manage basically whatever speed bump or whatever they come across in their life. There's not really this, like, personally, I have a pretty good confidence that I can tolerate a pretty wide array of things. Currently, I'm getting back into CrossFit after having, you know, done powerlifting for a while. And there's not really classically in the sport of CrossFit, anything that can be objectively measured, you should be able to do. And so going into that, I can imagine if there was a Joe who subscribed to the kinesiopathologic model or who had kinesiophobia would react to that scenario very differently than the movement optimist Joe. And I've been the kinesiopathologic Joe recently with my own symptoms. And so I know how easily things can creep up and you can psych yourself out. But let's just look at the differences between both Joes, right? The workout that I did yesterday was 20 minute, as many rounds as possible, 15 calorie row, 15 bench press reps at 115 pounds, and then 15 V-ups. If I was kinesiopathologic Joe looking into that, there are so many factors about that workout that I can panic about. There are so many things that I can pick apart in that workout that would give me pause, whether that's my back angle during the row or how far up the slide I'm going on the rower, or if my shoulder blades are pulled back on the bench press, or if my elbows are at a 45 degree angle, or if my low back is arched or not. And then if, like, I'm, you know, doing a full body flexion and putting tension on my spinal cord, and all, you can see how there's all these things that kinesiopathologic Joe just can get worked up about. And the thing here is that the getting worked up about is the part that kind of messes everything up. It's the only thing that messes everything up. Now that I say it out loud, there's no other part. Nothing changes about the structure of the workout just because I'm afraid of it. The only thing that changes is how I approach the workout, how I introspectively or internally gauge how the workout's going or while it's going, how I feel, how I fear or have confidence in the workout, and how I move within the workout. All of those things are going to be dictated by the kinesiophobia and the nocebo, or the expectation that things are going to go poorly. And so kinesiophobia Joe would probably do not super great during this one. There would be concerns that I'm going to herniate a disc, or that my shoulders are going to explode, or that I'm going to, you know, pull something, or what have you. We juxtapose this against movement optimist Joe, where the only thing that I look at when I see this workout is how I'm going to approach it in a performance standpoint. I have no concerns about the structural integrity of my body. I have no concerns about the ability for my body to tolerate the stimuli outside of, like, fatigue wise. And it just becomes a whole different can of worms. Like, when I look at the workout as a movement optimist, Joe, I'm just like, oh, this is going to be hard. Whereas if I look at the workout from kinesiopathologic Joe, I'm like, I might not even think about it being hard, because I might need to think about how I'm going to make sure that I make it through without something falling off of me, or how I'm going to, like, make sure that I don't injure myself during this workout. And how that ties back into us as physical therapists and us as healthcare providers is just, like, we being the authority figure for these people that are coming to talk to us, it's almost a given that the things that we tell them are going to influence how they go about the remainder of their lives. Unless they are very well educated on whatever it is that you're telling them about, right? An instance for me would be like when I went to the doctor about my foot and they told me that I might need foot surgery, and I thought that was the dumbest thing that I ever heard, right? Unless they're inoculated to the things that you're going to say, which are foreboding, then it's likely that it's going to have some sort of influence in some direction on their life. And how we kind of extrapolate that is if they leave your office kinesiopathologically influenced or nociboed, maybe at no fault of your own, this is just how they received it. Maybe it was something that you said that directly did that. Then if we look at how this kind of, and I almost think of, like, not ping pong, but maybe like trajectory of meteors or something, maybe pinball, I think, is a good one, right? If we pinball them in a direction, it sends them in this direction of, if they don't have those ideas altered again back towards being on track, then it just kind of snowballs. It snowballs in the idea that movement is bad, and that I'm going to get hurt if I move wrong, and that maybe I should move less intensely to make sure that I don't get hurt. And we wind up altering this person's life in a negative fashion, because we connect this back to the physical activity and this dose-dependent response. If they're decreasing that dose, they're decreasing that stimulus, then there's going to be less health that comes out. And this especially applies for people who aren't even hitting the minimum physical activity guidelines, or 80% of the population. If we're influencing them in a way that they become kinesiophobic and they're already sedentary, that is not going to be good for their morbidity and mortality, right? We know that a sedentary lifestyle leads to, or increases the risk of, things like diabetes, like cancer, all-cause mortality, you know, the classic sarcopenia, osteopenia, decreases in bone density and muscle thickness, dynapenia, decreases in ability to produce force, all these things that we, like, don't want to happen. And it doesn't seem like a lot. You know, you tell somebody to make sure that they keep their spine neutral when they're picking something up. But then when we look, if we, like, close our eyes, you can imagine all the things that fall under that category of picking something up with a neutral spine, right? I think if we were to take a minute right now to think of all of the activities in somebody's life that have nothing to do with exercise, we can think of an entire list of things that fall under things that information could apply to. And that's even outside of exercise, outside of physical activity, outside of training. If we think about training, it almost takes out an entire category of movement, which is like hinging. Hinging is super important, right? And so I don't mean to sound like, maybe I do, I don't mean to sound like a worry wart or anything here, but I just, whenever there isn't enough attention, or there isn't as much focus paid to kinesiophobia or nocebo, I'm always like, thinking about like so long down the line. I have story after story of people who come in to my clinic when I worked in the clinic, and even now as a remote coach, like I have so many people that come in just worried. I remember I worked for the Air Force. In the last clinic I worked at, a guy came in who had chronic neck pain or chronic upper back pain or something. And he had recently been to a chiropractic's office off base, and the chiropractor had him tie a tennis ball to this car roof, his car ceiling, to make sure that his head wasn't too far forward. It's almost like pulling your car into a garage to make sure that you don't run into the drywall. He had a tennis ball hanging so to make sure that his head wasn't too far forward. And so, you know, I stand here almost reflecting and being like, maybe I should like lighten up on the message. But then I hear stuff like that and I experience things like that. And it reinforces that we need to be more of movement optimists. We need to put less barriers in front of people. We need to get people moving at any cost, because if we're not, then the effects can be compounding over the years and the remainder of their life. And I don't think anybody listening to this wants to be the reason that somebody ends up not being active to the point that they become sick and die early. A little bit of doom and gloom for you today, but if we can become movement optimists together and trust that the human form and the human organism can tolerate more than we give it credit for, then I think that things can be okay. If somebody asks you a question nervous about a movement, instead of reinforcing that nervousness, validate it, but then say, you know what, I think that if we just do it like XYZ or maybe modify it like this, that we can still do it and not totally cut it out. So think about that. I'm going to go ahead and post a nice paper to read in the description down here. The Role of Kinesiophobia in Pain, Disability, and Quality of Life, I think is the title of it. But take a look at that. I think it's a good read. And let me know what you think.